Are your ulcerative colitis symptoms proving difficult to manage? Tremfya guselkumab can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. At 1 year, many patients taking Tremfya achieved clinical remission, and some patients also achieved endoscopic remission. Individual results may vary. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and TB. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Ask your doctor if Tremfya can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Thursday edition, Brian Kilmeade Show coming your direction. A lot going to break during this hour. The G7 is raging right now. Is going on in Canada, so there's going to be news there. We know there's Steve Witkoff is over in Russia. There's going to be news there. He's trying to find out their perspective on ceasefire. I have views on that. Mark Thiessen standing by. We assume dressed. Joel Rosenberg, editor-in-chief of the All Israel News and All Arab News, and president CEO of Near East Media, and author of The Beijing Betrayal, will be with us at the bottom of the hour. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
When Mayor Adams meets with me and wants to help us arrest criminal aliens, get us back in Rikers Island, she goes down there and tries to fire them. She's got the green light law where ICE officers and CBP officers can't get DMV data.
That is Tom Homan. Get him out. Mahmoud Khalil remains in detention in Louisiana, hopefully preparing for deportation as the anti-Semitic riots on campuses and unrest erupts around the country. The difference now is we have a president who will not tolerate it, and Tom Homan and Pam Bondi will prosecute it.
Number two.
Russian forces currently hold the momentum on the battlefield, making it unlikely that Vladimir Putin wants a ceasefire. On the other hand, he may not want to anger President Trump by rejecting his attempts to achieve peace here in Ukraine.
Well, that's true. CBS has that, but there was 450 drones that went into Moscow from Ukraine the other day. World awaits formal Russian response to Ukraine's approved U.S. brokered ceasefire agreement. Early indications, Putin not on board. Trump responds.
Number one.
As you know, we're going to be doing reciprocal tariffs. So whatever they charge us, we're charging them. Nobody can complain about that. Whatever it is, it doesn't even matter what it is. So I don't know why people get upset about that, because there's nothing more fair than that.
That is President Trump talking about tariffs, which are really roiling the market as of right now. Meanwhile, there's Canadian backlash causing a stock market that goes up and down. So far, it is a little bit down today, 22 percentage points. The Dems indicate they're going to go for a government shutdown, which I'm sure the market doesn't love. So a lot of people are talking about how Donald Trump is really tough on Zelensky and tough on Ukraine. I get it. They stopped sharing intelligence and stopped with weapons. But that all changed after the meeting in Saudi Arabia in Jeddah. Now the weapons are flowing again, and so is intelligence being shared again. Now it's up to Russia to show they're sincere. Here's Donald Trump yesterday, cut 14.
People are going to Russia right now as we speak, and hopefully we can get a ceasefire from Russia. But in a financial sense, yeah, we could do things very bad for Russia. It would be devastating for Russia, but I don't want to do that because I want to see peace. And we're getting close to maybe getting something done.
And I just want to see the ball in Russia's court to find out if the private conversation President Trump's having will translate into public stances. Mark Thiessen doing a lot of work on this on all sides, former chief speechwriter, columnist, Washington Post, Fox News contributor. Mark, what do you think? Where do the Russians stand on some of the issues that are going to be front and center today with Steve Witkoff in Moscow?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to confirm for you that I am, in fact, dressed because I'm at the airport. And so if I wasn't dressed, it would be illegal.
Yeah. Thank you very much. So Allison,
I just wanted you to
know,
because I know you raised the question at the start of the segment.
Let's get clarity on this. You got it.
So look, here's the thing. I think Trump is I hate to say this, but I think Trump did the right thing by suspending the aid to Ukraine, because it got Ukraine to do what they should have done from the beginning, what Zelensky should have done in that Oval Office meeting, which is say, Mr. President, we are in favor of a complete unconditional ceasefire, and we heard, you know, the ball's in Putin's court. And so 2 weeks later, that's exactly where we are. The Ukrainians have agreed to a ceasefire. There is, without conditions, total stoppage of fighting, which is what Trump wants. Trump's number one goal. Whenever you talk to Trump about Ukraine, the first thing he says is this war would have never happened if I was president. And two, we've got to stop the killing. And so he wants to stop the killing. And so he wants a immediate ceasefire while we negotiate a long-term peace. And the Ukrainians are now completely aligned with the United States when it comes to that. And as the reports are right now, that Putin is rejecting a ceasefire. At least that's what the Financial Times is reporting from the initial conversation. So if they maintain that position, by the way, the very important thing here right now is the Ukrainians agreed to a ceasefire unconditionally. So there's no negotiating with Russia for some conditions on a ceasefire. They have to do the same thing the Ukrainians did, just stop the fighting, and then we talk about whatever we want to talk about. And I hope that's the position the Trump administration takes.
So here's what Russia has said. No NATO membership, no foreign troops in Ukraine, international recognition that Russia owns Crimea and four other provinces. Thoughts?
None of that will happen. Or should happen. Here's the thing that we need to do. So first of all, there's steps to this, right? The first step is a ceasefire to stop the fighting, and there should be no negotiating about that. And then what the peace negotiation should be is there's going to be a DMZ, what the lines are. Ukrainians are going to have to make a lot of concessions. They're going to have to concede that that they're not going to get back all their territory. They're going to have to concede that there's not going to be war crimes trials for the absolute mass atrocities that took place in places like Bucha and other places. That's just not going to happen. Though the ICC arrest warrant, I'm sure, will stay in place. They're going to have to concede that other than the $300 billion in frozen assets, Russia is not going to pay reparations to build Ukraine. Those are very, very big concessions. Russia is going to have to concede that it's not that we're going to draw a line, whatever those lines are. Trump wants to change the lines of the current and get back some Ukrainian territory. He said that. And then there's going to be lines, and those are going to be the lines. And Ukraine is going to have to, the phrase is de facto rather than de jure recognition, right? So they're never going to acknowledge that that is Russian territory, but in practice, they're going to concede that territory is currently occupied by Russia and it's not going to change. And they're going to agree not to fight to take it back. Those are the concessions. Russia is going to have to concede that it's not going to start the war up. After that, Russia should have no say in anything that we negotiate with Ukraine in terms of security guarantees. Ukraine is a sovereign nation, and however we want to set up a security guarantee for them is up to us and the Ukrainians in Europe. And Russia should have no say in that. So we should not be negotiating with Russia whether Ukraine joins NATO or not, though I don't think they're going to get into NATO as part of this. We should not be negotiating with them whether they're foreign troops as peacekeepers. That's not, Russia has no say in that because they're going to be on Ukrainian sovereign territory. And they just have to accept that these are the lines, and that's all that happens.
I hope so. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to insist on no international troops. You know, their original stance was Ukraine will have immediate elections. By the way, Zelensky would run away with it. Number two is only 85,000 troops instead of a million-man army. That's never going to happen. And there are no international troops. That's not going to happen. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz called his Russian counterpart yesterday. No readout on what took place. Dave Ignatius, also with the Washington Post, said this about what Trump's doing with Putin or not doing. Cut 21.
If there's one way that Donald Trump could reset the global image of him, it's by being tough on Vladimir Putin. Something that many of us have wondered if he could ever do. If he does it, if he says, you have to do this, or, you know, we are going to take increasing steps to compel you to the table, that would be interesting.
And that one of it would be arm up. You either do this or we're going to give Ukraine arms like you've never seen before. They're already proven to be better fighters. Now they're going to be better armed.
Yeah. So first of all, I love David Ignatius. He's my colleague at The Washington Post. But Trump has been the toughest president on Russia since Ronald Reagan. I mean, he's done everything from impose sanctions to launch cyber attacks on Russia. In fact, the only two world leaders that have ever attacked Russia in its interior are Donald Trump and Zelensky. Because Trump launched a cyber attack on Russia, he killed more Wagner mercenaries than any president until Zelensky came along in Syria. So he doesn't have to prove his tough on Russia bona fides. And what has not been noticed is that Trump just allowed the exemptions that Biden put on Syria, on Russian oil sales to Europe, to expire. So he has cut, it is now illegal for Europe to buy Russian oil. He's cut off all the sales of Russian oil to Europe just by not renewing the exemptions that Biden had put in. So that's a major step to get tough on Russia. Look, what Russia wants is they want to create a condition where they can pause this war while Donald Trump is president and then restart it again as soon as another weak Democrat comes into office. And Trump understands that if he's going to do a Nobel Prize worthy agreement, it's got to make sure the war is ended permanently. The only way. So what Russia wants is weaken Ukraine militarily, force it into neutrality, and create the pretext for the next invasion. And so we can't give them any of those things, because if we do, then we're setting up the next Ukraine war, and Donald Trump doesn't want there ever to be a war in Ukraine again.
All right. So I want you to hear a little from this CBS package, this Holly Williams package, about what Zelensky was saying. Cut 16.
At a press conference in Kyiv yesterday, President Zelensky said Russia's attempt to escalate tensions between the U.S. and Ukraine had failed.
Last month, you suggested that President Trump was living in a disinformation space created by Russia. Mr. President, do you fear that the President of the United States is still being influenced by Russian disinformation about Ukraine?
The more the two sides talk, communicate, and discuss the details, he said, the more we'll be on the same page.
So there you go. He sees it as dividing Ukraine and the U.S. That's one of Russia's goals. And by talking, they can overcome that. No question.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't understand why these idiots keep asking questions like that are intended to divide Trump and Ukraine. It's completely unhelpful, this narrative that Trump is in Putin's pocket. He's not. He wants Ukraine to succeed. He wants Ukraine to survive as a sovereign nation. That's why he just he negotiated a long-term partnership on minerals development, which you don't negotiate a long-term minerals development plan with a country you don't expect to exist in a few years. And he wants to get back Ukrainian territory, and he wants to get them security guarantees that may prevent the war from stopping. He needs to be seen as a neutral arbiter in order to get a deal done. But he's trying to get a deal that saves Ukraine, and Putin wants to destroy Ukraine. So by definition, he's on Ukraine's side.
So it's going to be very interesting to see, because the communication between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump has been quiet. It's been between them, personal. Yeah. Now it's all public. Yeah. So now there's no more nuance. No, we're going to find out. And I'm going to ask you, Russia's just too smart to say, we reject everything. Because do they want to spend the next 3 3/4 years at odds with the West and the U.S.? Because if you make Trump look bad, I don't care who you are, he's not going to tolerate it. And he'll have no problem, as Zelensky knows, icing you out if that continues. As Trudeau knows, icing you out if that continues. And I think Putin is evil, but he's also smart. And I don't think he would do that. Do you?
I don't know how smart he is. And I don't know quite, you know, maybe I don't know if he's drunk the Kool-Aid in thinking that Russia, that Putin is really, that Trump really likes Russia and likes Putin and favors them, because everybody's telling him that Trump likes Putin. He's saying nice things about Putin as a negotiating tactic, not out of genuine affection. And so maybe he's drinking the Kool-Aid and thinking, well, Trump's not going to be tough on me. And I think he's going to be very surprised. Russia doesn't want to stop the war. I mean, if you think about where Russia is right now, they are very weak in the sense that they've thrown everything they have at Ukraine and they're gaining inches. They'll never be able to take over the country entirely right now. So it's in a stalemate, but they're making sort of small incremental progress on the ground, and they just launched an offensive in Kursk to cut off the Ukrainian supply lines. They don't want to stop that. Because if they succeed in that offensive, then they cut off then the Ukrainian troops in Kursk are surrounded and they can take back their entire territory. So right now is actually a very bad time for Putin to have a ceasefire, because he's making some strategic gains in the Kursk area and taking back his territory. So his military objective is to keep fighting as long as he can. And that's running directly counter to what Donald Trump wants, which is to stop the fighting right now where it is and stop the lines.
And the one thing I love that's going on, and that is the NATO allies and the G7 and EU are so alarmed they're going to have to put money into their own defense. He even said to Japan, hey, you will protect us. You know, we protect you, but are you going to protect us? So what he's doing in his Trumpian way is making them play money into their defense budget.
Yes, 100%. Look, nobody has gotten NATO to spend more money on defense than Donald Trump. He's gotten them to the point where only eight countries are not meeting their 2% commitment, and he's telling them that they need to raise it to 5. And Poland is at 5, and Poland is supporting that. And there's a lot of countries within NATO who want to increase. It probably won't go to 5, but they need to get to at least 3.5%, which is where the U.S. is right now. And that's, by the way, you know, going back to the previous point that David Ignatius was making, that's a tough on Russia policy. Putin does not want Europe to spend more money on defense. Trump has not exactly been a friend of Vladimir Putin. He says nice things about him. He wants to get along with him. But his policies have been actually incredibly tough on Russia.
Quick question on Iran. The letter the president sent last week was pretty much rejected by the Grand Ayatollah. We won't take threats. And we're not interested in talking about a nuclear program. There's a window here, Mark, that you know a lot about more military than I do in terms of the hardware and defense systems. That is right now, Iran is open, more open than they've been in the last 40 years, more susceptible. And there's so much at stake in the region. How much longer do we wait before we let Netanyahu go through that window?
Not too long. And I don't think it's a lot of people notice it, but Trump has given Israel the Moab, the mother of all bombs, which is the largest bomb in the world, short of a nuclear weapon. And so you drop that on the Iranian nuclear sites and goodbye. Iran is weaker than it's ever been. All of its major proxies have been destroyed. Its only Arab ally, Syria, has been overthrown. They tried to launch two attacks on Israel and utterly failed to kill anybody. And in retaliation, Israel has taken out their entire ballistic missile capability and all of their air defenses. So they are weak and strategically naked right now. That won't last forever. That situation. They're going to rebuild their ballistic missiles. They're going to rebuild their air defenses. So we've got a window right now. So they're not really as strong, as Trump would say, they don't have a lot of cards right now.
Right.
So if they were smart, they would negotiate an end to the nuclear program right now, because otherwise they're going to lose it.
Mark Thiessen, thanks so much. Appreciate it. We'll stay
Take
in
care.
Touch. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by former GOP strategist and host of the Rich Zeoli Show, Rich Zeoli. Available now on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Really, every day, I can't believe what we're witnessing. He's escalating a trade war with America's closest allies and trading partners. This is not the behavior of a stable genius. It's also not great for American business.
I'm calling it a Trump session, just like he's trying to shove it over to Biden. But really, it's his. He's sort of owning it by saying, I'll do what I want.
If he cared about the economy, he would be doing these Tesla commercials for the Social Security folks.
Anyways, that's talking about, but I'm glad you put Whoopi Goldberg in there, find out what not to think. There's a few things going on I think is important to bring up when you talk about the economy. Number one, the national average gas prices is going down. It's now $3.08. You know, the average price of regular gas decreased again, so egg prices are also down. That's also important. Interest rates are also down. So with the inflation down, egg prices down, and gas down, things are going in a positive direction. The tariffs have caused roil the market. There is a debate on whether the president could have been more organized in doing it, or is it part of the strategy to put people off balance and make them react? And maybe they react too bad, and then you escalate it up, and then you walk it down. But they don't even want to say the positive. All you say is just crazy. And bottom line is, the president's got a plan. I've never seen him more confident about it. But we'll discuss it. It's definitely worth bringing up. Next, the big challenge, China, Joe Rosenberg.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
There are two things that Trump has spoken about that are worth noting. One is the ability to add additional sanctions. The Russian economy is pretty fragile. They've been fighting a war for 3 years. Their inflation problems are serious. They've had to divert resources to the war economy. So significant new additional economic pressure would be something there. Keith Kellogg, who's the special envoy, said that our sanctions enforcement is now at about 3. Right. Sanctions may be at 8, but the enforcement's at 3. Well, you could move that up to 8 and have some real effect. And the second thing I just would note, Trump has talked from the beginning about bringing China in as, in effect, a co-guarantor of this settlement in Ukraine. If China, believing it's in its interest that this war end, I'm not sure China does think that, but if it decided that that was so, China could, I think, nudge Putin towards making concessions he's not now ready to.
No kidding. I mean, China's doing so much in the precursors and some of the dual-use weaponry that they can conceivably say, I'm not providing any weapons to Russia, but they're allowed to do with what they want, with what we give them. And they are providing weapons, especially when it comes to the drone technology. And right now, they like the fact that the West is all focused on Europe to a degree. They love the fact that they're able to buy oil from Iran through, despite the sanctions, at a discount rate. They love the fact that they could be anti-Israel by providing all these weaponry to Israel's enemies, Hezbollah, Hamas, and Iran. And they want people distracted, and they desperately don't want the West to pivot towards the Pacific. Joining us now is Joel Rosenberg, editor-in-chief of All Israeli News, Israel News, and All Arab News, president CEO of Near East Media, and author of the new book, The Beijing Betrayal. Joel, welcome back.
Brian, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me on.
Do you think the China wants the Russian war to end?
I don't think that, but I think I think Xi Jinping is really trying to recalculate all his foreign policy ambitions now that President Trump has won and is taking, you know, a no-huddle offense coming back into the White House. I think Xi Jinping was ready for Harris. Right. If Kamala Harris came in, you'd have another snowflake. And I think we would have seen a China invasion of Taiwan in 2026 or 2027. Now he's having to recalculate everything. So Trump could actually persuade Xi Jinping to back off temporarily, you know, as a tactical retreat and help Russia back off, because China has larger ambitions. China sees itself as the number one threat to the United States. That's what my new novel, The Beijing Betrayal, is about. What if the U.S. gets it wrong? What if Washington gets it wrong? But Trump so far is getting it right, and I think Xi Jinping might be willing to help nudge Putin to back down so that it clears the way for China to be the dominant player in the world against the United States, not Russia. I don't think Xi Jinping likes the fact that Putin is sucking up so much oxygen on the world stage.
Interesting, even though Putin seems to be struggling so much in this war for a superpower. I mean, no one thought that it was going to be 3 years in and giving up the carnage, like, and giving up so many Russian deaths, the death of so many Russian troops, right?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think, Brian, you spoke to me several years ago, and we talked all through this war in Israel, of course, and Gaza and Lebanon. But I think you and I talked several years ago, about 6 or 7 years ago, about my first novel in this series, which was called The Kremlin Conspiracy. That was about a Russian dictator rising to power in Moscow and trying to decide to invade Ukraine or to invade one of the NATO small Baltic countries, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. Well, we know how that played out, but that was a political thriller. But the thing is that Putin, yeah, he never thought that he would lose 800,000 soldiers and so much war machinery. It has humiliated him. And I believe that President Trump believes that Putin is on the verge of using tactical nuclear weapons in Ukraine. Why? Because he's desperate and he has got to reassert himself. He's either got to find a way out of this with honor, which he doesn't deserve, but we certainly want the war to end, or he's going to go crazy. And I think that's why Trump in the Oval Office and that dust up with Vladimir Zelensky, who I have sympathy for Zelensky, but he handled that all wrong in the White House. But remember what President Trump said is, Vladimir, you don't have good cards and you're gambling with World War III. That's what Trump is talking about. And tomorrow, the Chinese, the Russians, and the Iranians are all having a summit to talk about their anti-American, anti-Western alliance and how to strengthen it. This is what Trump is up against, and thank God it's him and not Kamala Harris.
Right. I mean, and then, of course, we can get into your other expertise, the Middle East. And this is an opportunity, as I just spoke with Mark Thiessen 15 minutes ago about. Right now, Iran has never been so susceptible, so vulnerable. Their bodyguards have been decimated in Hezbollah and Hamas, and their pathway through Syria has been stopped through an enemy regime in that awful country. It's hard to know who's worse, but they are anti-Iran. And now the Iraqis no longer have permission to buy Iranian oil. That exemption's been gone. So this is the moment. Their air defense has been damaged. Their nuclear program's been damaged. But they know they have a small window. What do you think's going to happen?
Well, all eyes are on President Trump. And this is, again, you know, thank God that sniper in Butler, you know, missed, right? That God turned President Trump's head. Because this is how close we are. We are an ear away from full-on global nuclear war, a World War III with three countries, Russia, Iran, and China. That's what I envisioned in the Beijing betrayal. But what Trump has now, he's got a lot of challenges. But here's the question. Everyone in Israel, and I'm a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, everyone in Israel is watching Trump because Trump is offering Iran a negotiated deal. Now, that makes us all nervous. But because I have trust in President Trump based on his record, I think he's giving Iran every opportunity to come and make a deal, come talk. He's being very generous. But Iran is saying, hell no. Literally, that's the statement from the foreign minister, hell no. So that is allowing Trump, if he wants to take the opportunity to take the kill shot, to work with Israel and maybe even the Arab countries, or just go it alone and take out Iran's nuclear facilities once and for all. That's not starting a new war. That's ending the war that began in 1979 when the Iranian Revolution took over the American embassy, held our Americans hostage for 444 days, and they've never paid a price.
No, Joe, you're right. It's been a 40-year war. But, Joe, listen to this. If they have this meeting and emerge with the meeting and the press conference, say, if one is attacked, it's attacked on all. That might make us think twice about doing this. That's why this window is so valuable right now. And we don't even have to do it. You could let Israel do it. We gave them what they need to get most of that job done, and we proved they can take it, they can pull it off, even when they had air defense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this, I have to say, Brian, I think I'm going to hang up my novel writing, skills for a while, because we are living through something that no matter how, you know, a thriller writer, a political thriller writer is writing about worst case scenarios that you pray to God never happens, but could. That's what the Beijing betrayal is. But I'm telling you, the situation that we are in right this minute is far more dangerous than any of the novels, New York Times best-selling novels that I've ever written. This is the highest stakes that we've ever been in, and it's about American leadership now. We lost 4 years as once Biden handled Afghanistan so horrifically. Then what happened? Vladimir Putin decided, okay, you got snowflakes in the White House. They'll melt under the heat. So he decided to invade Ukraine. And Iran decided, okay, the time to attack Israel from seven directions, it's on. The only person that didn't move, as I said on Fox News Sunday with Shannon the other day, is the only person that didn't move is Xi Jinping. Because I think he was caught off guard how weak the United States really was. And I don't think he was really ready quite yet to invade Taiwan. But now these three are pulling together, and we got to pray for our president and his senior leadership every day. This is not the movies. This is not the Beijing betrayal. This is real life, and it could go very dark very fast.
So here's Lieutenant General Adrian Spain talking about what the U.S. Air Force is facing with China.
It is also a fact that today's airmen will do so with the oldest airplanes, the smallest force, and with fewer monthly flying hours than at any point in our history. Airmen have and always will get the job done, but today they do so at elevated risk. Meanwhile, China's military forces are expanding and modernizing. Their nuclear modernization, long-range missile proliferation, and recent test flights of two sixth-gen aircraft is simply further evidence of the elevated threat in this strategic environment.
So that's not good.
That is not good. But, you got to love the president. He, you know, President Trump is like, we're going to make the American military and the Navy and the Air Force great again, Brian. But the question is time. You know, Biden and Harris cost us four critical strategic years. And Trump has every instinct is right. His policies are right. His team is fantastic. Obviously, your old buddy Pete Hegseth at Defense and Rubio at State and all the rest. But there's a question of time. Can we gear up our military and focus in time to thwart the three most dangerous enemies on the planet? I believe Vladimir Putin is the most dangerous man, even though Xi Jinping is horrible and evil. But Putin is still the guy that's invading countries. Xi Jinping hasn't invaded a country yet, not in a while. So, but then there's also North Korea, right? So those are the big three. You add North Korea, that's four. It's a matter of leadership and time. And we have, you know, the Democrats have cost the United States the element of true preparation. But what Trump is doing in the recent weeks, what is he doing most? He's not being so tough in his language with the enemies. He's doing policies that are good towards the enemies, but he's being tough towards our friends, Canada, Mexico, Panama, NATO. Why? Because he's trying to shore up the American alliances and say, guys, you are way off the reservation. You are not playing ball. You don't get who the superpower is that you need, and you're not helping. You're not helping the way you should. And God bless the president for doing this.
Right. And then he also went up to Japan, who he gets along with and says, hey, we would defend you, but are you going to defend us? And we know that Japan increased their defense spending. We need, I mean, Vietnam, with as with that history, that's a dicey history, they will be an ally. They see China as a threat. And then we have Australia. That I think could be an ally. South Korea has got to make sure that they're strong. And the Philippines are under constant threat. So if Taiwan goes, the spiral effect will be just really change the scope of the world.
It would be one of those tectonic shifts in global power where, again, if the United States does not defend Taiwan, again, most Americans don't know where Taiwan is. Okay, I get that. That's the problem with the public school system. But if we lose that small democratic island, it's not just the value of the island. As you say, every ally in the Pacific of the United States will be freaked out. They will not believe that we know how to run a Pacific alliance. And once the alliance unravels, China now has supremacy in the Pacific. And this is why one of President Trump's most important appointments is a guy named Elbridge Colby, who is going to be, Lord willing, the Undersecretary of Defense under Hegseth for policy. And this is one of the great China experts of our time. And he is advising the president on how to strengthen the U.S. alliance in the Pacific. And he is warning Taiwan, as much as we love Taiwan, they are not spending enough on their own defense. They need to move from 3% of GDP.
But we have to deliver the weapons that they bought. And we've been slow on that because that's been another issue. Lastly, I want you to hear President Trump. We see the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel riots, anti-American riots at Columbia in the past, you know, all throughout New York City.
Right.
Yesterday happened in Cornell, too. You don't hear anything from Chuck Schumer. Listen to Trump. Cut 36.
And Schumer is a Palestinian, as far as I'm concerned. You know, he's become a Palestinian. He used to be Jewish. He's not Jewish anymore. He's a Palestinian.
That's how upset so many people are, like me, that the Democratic Party has just left Israel, especially Schumer.
Yeah, well, I'm furious at Schumer. With all respect to the president, you know, there are other ways to blast Schumer. I know his point, and he's certainly getting a lot of attention for the point, and the president does well on that. But, yeah, this is insane that the Democratic Party overall has abandoned the Jewish people and they're rallying for this pro-Hamas foreign student at Columbia as though, like, he's some sort of civil rights hero like Martin Luther King Jr. The moral clarity of who's on the right side and who's not is becoming so clear. And, you know, the implosion of the left at the State of the Union address was so clear. you know, they couldn't stand up and cheer for American heroes, for Israeli hostages that have been released, for a black boy who wants to be a Secret Service agent or a police officer, at least, who has brain cancer. Like, what is wrong with that team? But the president's doing a pretty good job making it clear to the country the difference between right and wrong. It's so refreshing, and Israelis are so encouraged. We're a little worried right now on the whole, you know, let's make a deal with Iran, I don't think he really means it. I think Trump is exposing the hypocrisy of Iran and setting the stage for possible military action.
Right. I just think Netanyahu has this card that they know it's only going to get worse for you. Instead of there's so much pressure on Netanyahu, if Hamas holds out and Hezbollah holds out, things will get better. Now it's the other way. Things only going to get worse because he's got a friend in the White House, a real friend.
Think about where we were in May of last year, Brian, where President Biden was insisting that the only way to get our hostages out from Gaza was to effectively surrender. He called it a permanent ceasefire. That was May of last year. And that all the Hamas leadership was still alive. Yahya Sinwar, Mohammed Def, Ismail Haniyeh, all the senior Hezbollah leadership was still alive. Hassan Nasrallah, all the pagers hadn't blown up yet. The walkie-talkies hadn't but Biden wanted to surrender in May of last year. And God bless Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Gotcha. Joel, let's hold it there. I hear you. Author, pick up the Beijing betrayal. It's remarkably prescient. Joel Rosenberg, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I mean, what's coming out of Washington would scare the living bejesus out of anybody, independent, Republican, or Democrat. This administration is in total meltdown.
This is a code red, shout it from the rooftops moment. Trump is letting Elon Musk steal our children's futures.
These are our, like our angry teenage years, right? And what do you do when you have a teenager who's threatening themselves and others? You just try to get them through this period alive.
Right. So a guy that is trying to bring peace in the Ukraine, trying to bring peace over the Middle East, actively shuttling back and forth. At the same time, inflation is down. At the same time, you have gas and oil prices are down. You have a fully confirmed cabinet earlier than almost any other administration in history. And because the tariffs have the market going up and down, Elon Musk is stealing your children's future. It's just insane. And why is everything Elizabeth Warren says like to someone doing their reading on a book on tape for children? The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that Elon Musk is getting such a raw deal. All he's doing is trying to help by cutting the budget. And you know who's offended? Democrats are offended that he's trying to lean out the government that is $2 trillion annually in debt.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. So glad you're there. Bottom of the hour, Brett Baer will be joining us, chief political anchor at Fox News, and Senator James Lankford standing by. A lot going on. G7 taking place in Canada. Normally, not much happens. It's a lot of different, a little different now, because we have so much going on with trade, and we have a raging war in Eastern Europe that might be going away, or at least going into pause. Let's hope. And then we do have SpaceX trying to get a rocket into the sky to save, to take back two astronauts that went up for 9 days, end up staying there for 9 months. Why Boeing is not paying for this, I don't know. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
When Mayor Adams meets with me and wants to help us arrest criminal aliens, get us back in Rikers Island, she goes down and tries to fire them. She's got the green light law where ICE officers and CBP officers can't get DMV data.
It's inexcusable. Tom Holman, get him out. Mahmoud Khalil remains in detention, hopefully preparing for deportation as the anti-Semitic riots and unrest erupt across multiple college campuses. The difference now is we have a president who will not tolerate it, and Tom Homan and Pam Bondi who will prosecute it.
Number two.
Russian forces currently hold the momentum on the battlefield, making it unlikely that Vladimir Putin wants a ceasefire. On the other hand, he may not want to anger President Trump by rejecting his attempts to achieve peace here in Ukraine.
You would say that. That's CBS. World awaits a formal Russian response to Ukraine-approved U.S.-brokered ceasefire agreement. Early indications, Putin not on board.
Number one.
As you know, we're going to be doing reciprocal tariffs. So whatever they charge us, we're charging them. Nobody can complain about that. Whatever it is, it doesn't even matter what it is. So I don't know why people get upset about that, because there's nothing more fair than that.
Well, it is tariff time. It's the economy dominating the national dialogue as the Trump tariffs solicit a EU and Canadian backlash, causing a rollicking stock market. We'll look at the plan going forward. And we got this thing called a government shutdown, which is a day away. Let's bring in a Senator James Lankford. KRMG listeners know him well over in Tulsa. He's on the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, Finance, Intelligence, and Ethics. Senator, welcome back.
Hey, thank you. Glad to be back with you, Brian.
First off, your reaction to the rollicking markets this week of the exchange on tariffs.
Yeah, everybody's trying to figure out what direction other countries are going to go. That when the United States pushes back and says, we're not going to allow you to be able to just raise tariffs on us and we're not have an American response, everyone's trying to be able to figure out what that means for supply chains and all those things. So it's temporary chaos, quite frankly, in the market to try to get long-term stability.
Are you okay with the way the Trump team is doing it?
Yeah, they're very targeted at this point. I'm not a big fan of tariffs just for tariffs' sake, because they do end up raising prices if they're long term and have a high impact. But the way President Trump is doing it right now is talking about reciprocal tariffs. It's deliberately intended to try to drive prices down to say, if you're charging us high prices on it, then we're going to push back and try to be able to drive that down. The goal is not to get higher tariffs on it. The goal is to get lower tariffs to the end of it. And what the president's doing in Mexico and with Canada to say, we need more help to stop the flow of fentanyl into our country while we're doing treatment centers and our families are trying to be able to engage to stop it on the streets and law enforcement is stepping up on the streets to be able to stop it. We need help stopping the supply coming in. That's significant.
Yeah, I think so. There's a couple of things going on, as you know, with Canada and the European Union, who hit us back hard with tariffs. And then we decided to put a 200% tariff on a wine coming back from Europe. So this is the sparring. I mean, this is the early blows. There's no knockout yet. I want you to hear what Doug Ford said yesterday as he heads to New York, Washington today. Cut six.
I want to make sure that we send more electricity. Well, if I want to send more critical minerals. But there was an unprovoked attack on Canada, on families, on jobs, on businesses. For what reason? You know, the market's speaking loud and clear. Consumer confidence is down. The market's tumbling. You know, there's going to be plants closed in the U.S. Assembly plants will shut down because they won't have the aluminum, or they'll be paying twice, three times as much.
So Doug Ford, he's the premier of Ontario, and he's coming to New York. He blames Trump.
Yeah, I get it. He's going to blame Trump. Obviously, a Biden administration would have just let this all happen. And so I understand why he's blaming Trump on it. But at the end of the day, what President Trump is saying is pretty clear. If you raise prices on us, we're going to raise prices on you. There's some areas that have been long-term disputes with Canada on things like softwood lumber and areas like dairy, where they have limits and caps coming in from cheese from the United States. And the folks from Wisconsin want to continue to be able to increase sales on that, but they've got some protectionist measures on it. So USMCA, when President Trump negotiated that years ago, that has a renegotiation date. It is actually this year when they start the renegotiation date on it. So I think right now, part of what President Trump is doing is he's laying the predicate for those negotiations to say, when we get to those negotiations, I'm going to try to press you on some of these areas that have been protectionist for them. And so let's open it up. I am more for let's do more trade. More trade brings prices down, but it's got to be fair trade in the process.
I mean, reciprocal seems to make total sense, because then if it is unbalanced, then India will look at us and say, OK, we're at 60. You are at zero. So let's meet. Just going to be charging them 60% tariffs on certain items, whether it's cars or anything else. And then we're going to get to China in April. So do you think we should have just waited for the reciprocal tariff deadline to come in?
Yeah, we'll have a bit of both on this. I think President Trump's starting the negotiation on it and trying to be able to move some things like fentanyl and try to increase enforcement on the border. But the other thing is not just tariffs. There are other countries that have value-added tax. They do other subsidies. China, for instance, they do huge government subsidies on preferred industry, and so they drive the price down. And the company will say, well, this is all it costs to be able to manufacture it so I can sell it for cheaper, but it's also got a huge Chinese subsidy from their government on it as well. That makes a difference on it. So you can't just look at tariff to tariff. You've got to look at their tax policy and their subsidy policy to really determine what's equal.
Yeah, the egg prices are now down, which is significant. They're down $1.30. You have gas average. A year ago was $3.39. Now it's $3.08 a gallon. So the stock market did tick up. The NASDAQ did tick up yesterday. Right now it's slightly down. So, Senator, let's talk about something else, and that's the government shutdown. We know that Senator Schumer doesn't seem to want to do what the House did, and that is just have a CR with certain additions of certain increases in defense. It looks like that they want to shut it down. Your thoughts, because it's so obvious this will be the Democrats' fault this time.
Oh, yeah. This is the Schumer shutdown. There's no question. He announced a month ago that he wanted to be able to shut the government down on it. It didn't matter what it was on it. He said, I want to be able to have this big fight. He wants to show the far left that I'm fighting against President Trump. But the problem is he's fighting against something the American people look at and go, well, that looks like that's okay. We're literally keeping spending levels at the same as they were last year. No question Republicans want to dramatically decrease the spending numbers. But we've said, okay, right now, we're just going to keep it the same level. We're increasing defense just a little bit. We also increased, by the way, what's called the WIC program, that provides special benefits for mothers with infants and children on it. We also increased that program. Everybody leaves that out as well to say that we want to make sure that's also continuing to be able to take care of the most vulnerable in our society. So that had a small increase. Defense had a small increase. Everything else basically stayed the same on it. And we said, okay, we're going to do that and keep us going. Then let's have the fight in September on the rest of it. Schumer saying he wants to be able to have a big fight now. All he's really looking for is leverage and publicity. Everybody knows it. And so let's just get through this week, get this done, and then we got to deal with tax policy. We got to deal with all of our spending issues and have a big budget fight this fall.
Right. Here is Chuck yesterday, cut 35.
Funding the government should be a bipartisan effort. But Republicans chose a partisan path, drafting their continuing resolution without any input from congressional Democrats. Because of that, Republicans do not have the votes in the Senate to invoke cloture on the House CR. Our caucus is unified on a clean April 11th CR that will keep the government open and give Congress time to negotiate bipartisan legislation that can pass.
So he wants 30 days.
Well, 30 days from now, he'll want 30 more. This is all about trying to just get a pound of flesh and leverage for him to be able to say, if you don't bow to our demands, then we're not going to get it. If you want to know the real insight on this,
yep,
we had 12 appropriation bills last year that were done through committee, bipartisan. Six of them were unanimous coming out of committee, and Chuck Schumer never brought them to the floor. So it's always interesting for him to say, we want to do bipartisan work on appropriations. Last year, we actually did bipartisan work on negotiations, and Chuck Schumer, when he was in charge, would not bring a single one of those bills even up for a vote. So it's a little difficult to be able to believe him now. Everyone sees the politics and what's actually going on.
All right, so what's interesting is Senator Hickenlooper now says, we're in this trouble. He says, if you shut down the government, the president is the person who decides what is essential. He decides what part of the government stays open. So you're actually giving him more power. That's the last thing they want to do, is give Trump more power and Elon Musk more power.
Yeah, but this is a moment where Democrats are so disjointed in the plan. They're literally cutting off their own nose to spite their face at this point. They understand this gives Trump more power, but it just continues to be able to be the area that they're just driven to on it. So for me, I look at it and I say, let's do the common sense thing here. Let's keep us going. Let's not have a shutdown. The shutdowns actually waste more money. And if Democrats are worried about federal workers, which, by the way, I'm very respectful of federal workers. It's a very tumultuous time for them as they're trying trying to be able to deal with, okay, what's going to happen next? I'm respectful of that as human beings on it. The worst thing that we could do for those folks right now is to have a government shutdown on top of it and give them even more chaos in their life on it. We got to deal with reducing our federal workforce. We got to reduce our spending on it. That's going to create some chaos on it. Let's don't add this on top. Let's actually do the responsible thing on it.
So we're finding out a lot of things about the Biden administration. Number one is they cook the books when it comes to their records on apprehensions at the border. They say, yeah, we got these guys, but they don't tell you that they let them go. Literally right. Let them go inside. So they flat out lied. Now, here you are with your sleeves rolled up, working feverishly to try to get some type of deal to unfreeze Ukrainian aid and try to get some type of compromise on the border. Did you know this?
Yes, I did know that, actually. And just to clarify things, I wasn't working on the Ukraine side of it. I was working on the border side of it.
But it was part of the deal.
It was part of the final deal in the package on it. My focus was last year I knew we had at least 1 million more people illegally coming into the country before the presidential election. And at that point, last February, we didn't know who was going to win. I believe Trump was going to win, and he did. But I thought if I can stop 1 million more people from coming in, I would do it. And so my focus last year was let's stop it as fast as we possibly can to be able to prevent more of these what they call special interest aliens, folks coming from terror network areas that we don't know anything about them. If we can stop those folks coming in sooner, let's do it. I'm grateful the president's finally stopped it now. Last year when we were talking about this, we had 12,000 people a day illegally crossing the border. Now we have less than 200 even trying to cross the border. That's a huge drop. But my concern is 5 years from now, who's going to be president? Are they going to put those same Biden policies right back in place? We need to fix the law so no matter who is the president, we've got strong law to be able to make sure that never happens again.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers have gone so down. It is unbelievable. It's a comprehensive effort. The word is out. You get in. If we come in illegally, you're going to be tossed. Yep. Number two, there's pressure on the interior of the country to get illegals out. And number three, I think that the Secretary of State Rubio put a lot of pressure on Central and South America early to say there's going to be a new game. There's a new sheriff in town. And I think all this combined together to work is even done better than you thought it would.
It has come down very, very rapidly. I knew it could come down incredibly fast, and it has. And I'm grateful for the whole of government effort that they've actually taken on. I actually had a Central American delegation I met with just yesterday that they started with, here's what we're doing to be able to stop illegal immigration through our country to yours. And they were being very clear. They're hearing the message loud and clear. If you're going to cooperate with America, one of the focuses you got to have is you can't just turn a blind eye to immigration coming through their country that they know is actually coming to America. They've got to stop it there. If we can stop it there, that makes a huge difference of what we're stopping at our border as well.
Your thoughts on DOGE and its effectiveness?
Yeah, DOGE has been incredibly effective, taken off on it. The hard part is trying to be able to get law implemented on it to make sure it sticks long term. And the second part of it is trying to be able to manage, because DOGE sometimes is saying things like, hey, we're going to do a hiring freeze on it. But then when it gets down into individual agencies and hiring groups, they're interpreting it different than how DOGE meant it. And so some of the chaos that you're seeing right now in different agencies and such is an interpretation of what to do rather than actually what they're instructing. Let me give an example. Term employees. These are contract folks that come in for short periods of time. They get re-upped in their contract because there's business to be able to get done on it. They're not long-term employees. They're short-term. But we've got some federal employees that have said, well, the hiring freeze would include those term employees. We just won't renew their contract, though there's work to be done. Well, DOGE is stepping out, and Elon Musk is saying, that's not at all what was meant. You're interpreting it wrong. What was actually what we were intending to do? We're just saying we're not going to add additional spots. So some of what you're seeing in the news is just bad interpretation and communication at this point. But the intent of this is stop wasting American taxpayer dollars. Everybody sees the waste on it. Make it stop.
Just real quick, Ray Dalio came out, one of the most respected investors in the world, way too into China, if you ask me. But he warned that the mounting U.S. debt problems could lead to shocking developments in our economy, that the deficit has to go from 7.2% of our GDP to 3% quickly. Isn't that something that should be communicated better, that Doge is trying to do? I know Musk does it when he does an interview. But do you think if that should be made a focus and let people challenge that? Are they pro-debt and interest payments?
Brian, everybody is for a balanced budget until you actually have to do it, because everybody has lived on the federal excess for so many years. So it's like, hey, I balance my budget, but don't cut off my project for my new pool in my city park, or don't cut off my new benefit for whatever it may be. Don't cut off my benefit for this street. Everybody looks at it and says, balance it, but just don't hurt me on it. That's the challenge we have. For a decade, I've put out federal fumble books, and I've identified here's waste, here's waste, here's waste. And everyone says, oh, that's interesting that there's waste in government, but there's been no effort to do it until now. And right. Now with President Trump's leadership, he's saying we're going to actually do something about it. And now you got people right. screaming and saying, well, stop. Don't we like this extra benefit on it. Cash is always nice when it's free, but at some point it has right. to be paid for. And the American people all know in their gut we should get back to balance. But let's figure out how to be able to do that and then be able to live within our means.
Senator James Lankford, thanks so much.
You bet. Glad to do it, Brian. Keep praying for the nation.
Absolutely. 1-866-408-7669. Time for the nation to speak up and call up. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
These are, you know, the scariest times in my lifetime. That's all. I mean, I think that's objectively the truth. He is now trying to end what the founding fathers were pretty smart about, creating a form of government where there were checks and balances, you know, a legislative body, an executive body, and a judiciary. So he is moving aggressively in all of these areas. Yeah, there was gravity in my voice. This is a scary moment.
What are you so scared about, Bernie Sanders, that the most experienced president, that was once the most inexperienced president, is now back in charge, that you lost the House, you lost the Senate, and this guy's trying to get things done through executive orders, which were totally constitutional? Number two, they're about to pass, I believe, one beautiful bill. I think it'll get through the House and Senate. The House has really impressed me so far. And he's more scared. Now, think about this. After 9/11, not scared. World War II, he's 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, grew up in the aftermath, the destruction of all of Europe. Not scared. Cold War ends. What's going to be next? Not scared. But now, Vietnam, of course, Korea, not scared. But he's scared now that Donald Trump is trying to broker peace in the two war-torn areas of the world. I don't know. You could say you don't like Trump, but when you say things like that, it's hard for me to take you serious. What about you?
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'll always have flexibility, but there will be very little flexibility once we start. April 2nd is going to be a very big day for the United States of America. The United States of America is going to take back a lot of what was stolen from it by other countries and by, frankly, incompetent U.S. leadership. Grossly incompetent.
All right, that is President of the United States talking about reciprocal tariffs. Whatever you put on us, we're putting on you. I don't care, developing nation, accomplished nation, consolidated nations like the European Union, whatever, that's it. But I would do something a little different. I would do a free trade deal right away with the UK. Why? Because, Mr. President, you never were big into the European Union. You were convinced, and maybe I think you're right, but it wasn't in a devious way. They were consolidated in order to compete with us. Good. That's what they decided to do. So when UK split off, they should be rewarded. President Obama told them not to. You go to the back of the queue. I would say, look, I'm going to tell you how fair I am. I'm doing a free trade deal with UK. Starmer needs it, and I think the UK needs it. And I would love to see that done. And it would go bucking the trend of people who think that he's just ratcheting up all trade. He shows you he is picking and choosing who's been loyal to him. Brett Baer joins us now. You know he's getting set to host his show tonight. Brett, welcome back.
Hey, Brian.
So this whole tariff thing has really rollicked the market, and I think that a lot of people are maybe mischaracterizing how much damage it's done. I mean, it's the market's going up and down. It always does. You report on it in your A block every single night. But there are other things going on I think is important in terms of the market goes up, but the egg prices are going down. Interest rates are going down. Average gas prices a year ago, $3.39. Today, $3.08. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, energy prices are heading in the right direction. That is even before a lot of this stuff has kicked in as far as what they're trying to do and opening new leases and new opportunities for companies to invest in the future as far as energy goes. And listen, I do think that there is volatility here. The market doesn't love volatility, and the back and forth with the tariffs on Canada didn't help that. But there is a as the White House talks about, a strategy here, getting to April 2nd on reciprocal to open up what they see as a fair trade. If you put something on our products, then we're going to put them on yours. And we're going to see how this goes. I mean, the ultimate goal is to bring companies and open up manufacturing much more inside the U.S. that does not have tariffs and create jobs. And we're going to see if that works. So he's announced a lot of, the president has, of investment coming into the U.S. We're going to see if it pays off.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I know Doug Ford, I guess, is in town. He is the premier of Ontario. They're trying to work things out. Democrats are having a field day with this. Cut 11.
Really, every day, I can't believe what we're witnessing. He's escalating a trade war with America's closest allies and trading partners. This is not the behavior of a stable genius. It's also not great for American business.
I'm calling it a Trump session, just like he's trying to shove it over to Biden. But really, it's his. He's sort of owning it by saying, I'll do what I want.
If he cared about the economy, he would be doing these Tesla commercials for the Social Security folks.
I don't even know what that means. That's economist Whoopi Goldberg. But you could see what's happening, the hysteria about the market gyrations. And you know what? I saw that Jamie Dimon came out yesterday, as you know, J.P. Morgan. He came out and said, now a 40% chance at recession.
Yeah.
So the question is, how close are we? What do you think the president, is this self-inflicted? Do you think there's a grander plan here? Because the people explaining it say that we want to bring jobs back here and rebalance trade.
Yeah, listen, I think it's a risky plan. I think it's something that that may see some pain on the short side, and you know he's got to explain that. But it is a plan, and we're going to see if it pays off. I think, you know, just on a process thing, if the Congress had moved forward with tax cuts and they were happening simultaneously, or if that had happened at first, I think there would have been more of a thought of businesses not getting as freaked out. But it's a sequential thing, and you know, they have to do it before the midterms, because the way it looks now, it'll be tough to hold on to those chambers of Congress.
Kind of exciting time. It looks like they got out of Jeddah with a lot of momentum in Saudi Arabia between the U.S. and Ukraine. They said, look, these are the parameters for a ceasefire. Now it's time for Russia to step up and let everybody know where they stand. It looks as though they say they want all the acquired land, recognize Crimea and the Donbass region as part of Russia now. They don't want international troops. They want immediate elections for, and they want to be able to put, I guess, Russian candidates, because Zelensky's going to win, in Ukraine, and a smaller force. Your thoughts about how much pressure is on Russia right now?
Well, if they say no to a ceasefire, the onus is on them, and it's kind of like lifts the veil of do they really want peace or not. And then you have a situation where the Trump administration and the president need to make a decision whether to put the screws on Russia even more, up the sanctions, increase the weapons to Ukraine, and really put the squeeze on them. And as the president said, do things that they haven't done, squeezing Russian banking and other things, to, you know, make them change their mind. Currently, what they're coming back with is a non-starter for Ukraine and frankly, for the U.S.
For people who think that Donald Trump is not tough on Russia, they weren't paying attention a couple of weeks ago with the Truth Social post. They didn't listen yesterday. Cut 14.
People are going to Russia right now as we speak, and hopefully we can get a ceasefire from Russia. But in a financial sense, yeah, we could do things very bad for Russia. It would be devastating for Russia, but I don't want to do that because I want to see peace. And we're getting close to maybe getting something done.
So I think when he talks tough on Russia and realize the pressure now on Putin to answer a U.S. brokered peace deal, do they really want to alienate the president of the United States, who has been somewhat open to bringing them back in to the world community when you have 3 3/4 years left with this president? How does that work to Russia's advantage? I'm very curious to see what they think is best for them.
Yeah, and if they don't change the current trajectory, I think that's a big question. Listen, when he's hinting about the big things, I mean, they can put the squeeze on Russian banks, which are already squeezed, and the central bank in Russia is, you know, really in a bad spot as far as cratering the economy. I mean, for all the tough talk we talk about Putin, you know, having the cards that he's playing, he's bluffing a lot when it comes to his economy. And with some strategic moves, the U.S. could do a lot that changes that dynamic quickly.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens. The G7 is going to be consequential because Secretary of State Rubio usually goes up there and says, "Hey, Canada, what's going on? Nice to see you. Look good. Yeah, congratulations on your new job." Now it's like, oh, let's not bring up the 51st state thing. So we're not looking to annex you. So this is going to be interesting. I think there's going to be some news coming out of the G7, don't you?
Yeah, it'll be fiery, something tells me. You know, there's this new nationalist upswing in Canada because of, you know, everything the president has said about the 51st state, because of this trade war back and forth. And, you know, it changes the dynamic for politics up there. So don't be surprised to see Canadians, you know, getting out their skis and going full Canadian really putting it to the U.S. to try to stand up and look tough.
We'll see what happens. Who's your panel tonight?
Tonight, I don't know. I'm going to have my meeting in about 5 minutes.
And you'll decide? Do you have like a bunch of people outside the room and you go in there and then decide what three are allowed to come in?
They come in, yeah, one by one. Now, I have a stable, and we're going to put them together in the right, fair, and balanced way.
Brett Baer, thanks so much.
All right, see you.
1-866-408-7669. We're going to get to your calls in just a moment. Your chance to sound off or write me at BrianKilmeade.com. Quick announcement coming up next weekend, a week from this Saturday, the 21st, live on stage. I'll be in St. Louis at the Factory, History, Liberty, and Laughs. It is a full-on show, immersive show. Eric has told me in confidence it is better than Hamilton, and almost as good as that Louis Armstrong play that's now in New York City on Broadway. So I want to see you in person, BrianKilmeade.com. We're almost at our cap at VIPs, so please jump in. That's our chance to talk before the show about whatever's on your mind. We take pictures, and you get Teddy and Booker T. So George Washington, Secret Six, Thomas Jefferson, Tripoli Pirates, Andrew Jackson, The Miracle of New Orleans, Sam Houston, The Alamo Avengers, the President and Freedom Fighter, and now Teddy and Booker T. So we'll move you through American history and get you pumped up, and we cap it off with the biggest comeback in political history, and that's Donald Trump. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Back in a moment.
In-depth analysis. Insightful commentary. Probing questions.
What's a furry again?
I'll tell you.
Thinks they're an animal?
Sure.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
How many more New Yorkers will you contain? How many more New Yorkers without charge? Do you believe in the First Amendment? Do you believe in the First Amendment, Tom Homan?
How great is that? That is some idiot who wants to be a mayoral candidate. He's actually in, I think, fourth place, just screaming, "Hey, do you believe in the First Amendment, Tom Homan?" And what are they responding to? They're responding to the arrest of this agitator, 30 years old, still a graduate student, reportedly. Got here 9 months later. He's married, and now he's got a green card, and now he's probably going to be deported. That's my hope. And his name is Khalil, Mahmoud Khalil, and he is being held in Louisiana now. Why? He's handing out flyers and organizing the takeover of buildings and campus sit-ins and street riots, all in the name of Sinwar, Hamas, not Palestinian, Hamas, as well as Nasrallah, handing out those things and interrupting Jewish students as they try to get to class and threatening them in many ways. So yesterday there was yesterday you had Tom Homan go up to Albany to talk to the Republican delegation about how much they need cooperation from the locals with ICE in order to round up all the illegals here and a lot of the TDA gang members are here. So there was all these protests in Albany that Tom Homan was there, who was staring at these guys while eating an apple. And it was just awesome to see these people losing their mind for a Hamas sympathizer, might even be a member, who knows? And there's going to be more arrests too. Bigger question, would you ever send your kid to Columbia? If your kid is smart enough to get into Columbia, that means you can get into almost any school in the country, really. Especially if they're no longer going to do this affirmative action type of admission, which in theory they're stopped. Christopher Rim is a college admission consultant. He sees the anti-Semitism on these campuses. He sees that they took $400 million from Columbia. They know that Yale and Harvard and all these other ones are going to be next. This is what he says he found already. Cut 31.
But I think right now, by pulling the funding, I think what Trump is doing makes a lot of sense. And I think these schools are going to be taking it seriously. They need this funding in order to, you know, keep up with all the programming, the research, the faculty, really retain the faculty as well. And without all of this, what is a university? So they need this in order to attract students, because I have students who are, you know, applying to 6-7 Ivies. One Ivy that's definitely not on it is Columbia. And students are in real time removing Columbia from their college list.
I love it. I love it. I love it. That ain't going to pay the price. Robert Kraft, for example, a Columbia graduate, prideful and gives a lot of money. He stopped giving money. How many others are going to do that? Now think about this. You're on Wall Street. You got a guy with a finance or a woman with a finance degree coming from Columbia. They come in for an interview. You look at them and go, let me second. Are you going to come protest me? I'm Jewish. Are you going to have a problem with me? Oh, you're going to swear that you're not part of the anti-Semitic feeling on college campus. Well, why would you want to have that legacy? But you got to prove yourself that you're not. Mahmoud Khalil is the one who will remain in ICE detention. And now we're having people say, I don't want any part of it, because Khalil is not where it begins and ends. It may be where it begins, but there are so many there who showed up outside the courtroom. It makes me think that there's a lot more there. And then they raid the Cornell classroom, chanting not only anti-Semitic phrases, but anti-Western culture phrases at an Ivy League in Ithaca, New York. Listen to this Columbia protester. Tell me if you think they regret their actions. Cut 30.
I think we got to have solidarity. I'm a U.S. citizen. They can't do that to me. That's why I'm here, saying all the same things that they're going to say. So deport me. You can't. And you're going to see them start to come after full-fledged U.S. citizens. They'll use whatever excuse they want. They always have. That's always been the case. But we're ready, and we're not going to stop. And the harder they crack down, the harder we're going to fight back, period.
Good luck with that. How about going to class? And if you aren't a student, how about just going somewhere else? I actually think that is beyond free speech. That's hate speech. Anti-Semitism, what exactly do you say? Let's hear what they have to say. Also, you have to go ahead and put the sound up next time you hear these riots or walk by. They are chanting the most vile things at the cops, and I'm done with that. The way they treat and talk to these cops, and they can get away with it, they're called all these vile names I will not repeat. And why they're able to get away with that and saying NYPD, KKK, and all this stuff to black officers, which is just shows you what geniuses they are. Here's more from Christopher Rim. He talked about what it's like being a Jewish student. Cut 32.
I think, you know, a lot of our students, you know, who are Jewish, they want free speech on campus. But what they don't want is the violence. They don't want protesters destroying property, blocking access to campuses, dining halls, libraries. There's a difference between free speech and really destroying property on campus.
Yeah, I would think so. Columbia's president has a new statement out that says, over the last months, I've worked every day to guide our community based upon my principles, seeking to forge understanding out of discord and collaboration of conflict. Now, if you really want to get credibility left, invite the NYPD on campus and let ICE run wild with the people here illegally and let them go ahead and analyze if they really deserve the green cards they have right now. So there's a lot of people. I see this quote in this story in the New York Post today. A 21-year-old from Australia is questioning his Columbia acceptance. Says, quote, I guess what was has me second guessing is how dangerous it is on campus. He goes, will professors grade me differently if I'm outspoken about Israel or if I'm not outspoken about Israel? I thought that being a Jew on campus could be empowering in a sense, kind of like sticking the middle finger to these people by advocating on campus and demonstrating for Israel. It is just absolutely terrible that they even have to think about this. But the difference is now there's no longer a feeling of helplessness that you don't have a president. You don't have you have Democratic leadership who are looking to go the other way and focus on what Israel's doing in Gaza instead of what the students are doing in America and listening to what they have to say. You have a attorney general. You have an ICE director. You have a border czar in Tom Homan directing it all, who are not going to tolerate this. And all your 18 to 22-year-olds, back to your parents. Let them figure out what they did wrong in raising you. And to me, the word, it's a lot. Here's Donald Trump, cut 34.
These people are sick. They don't know what's happening in the real world. The Democrats have to get their act together. And if they don't vote, then what you're going to do is you're going to have taxes that are going to go through the roof. You're going to have a very bad time. You're going to have some very bad things happen, and people right. are going to blame the Democrats.
And that was the shutdown. That was my fault. But what I was going to read is this. This is what Trump said. Israel has been under siege, and you could see it, and they have to fight back. October 7th was a terrible thing. People don't like to mention it, but it was terrible. And that better not be replicated here in America, and that's what I'm seeing on these campuses. So that's literally what Trump was saying yesterday. He's got those students back, and I think that's got to make them feel better, as opposed to Joe Biden, who was silent. Chuck Schumer, not a word. Terrible.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Jimmy Failla at the bottom of the hour. He's got a big show coming up in Florida over in the Jacksonville area, Florida Theater. He'll talk about that and get ready for all the breaking news. Patrick Murphy in studio, the former Democratic congressman from Pennsylvania, also the 32nd Army Undersecretary. And he's going to be here to talk in just a moment. Meanwhile, we are waiting to find out about the government shutdown. I'll talk to Patrick about that, whether there's going to be a break there. You need at least seven Democrats, because you could lose Rand Paul in order to not have the government shutdown. The market does not want to see that shutdown. We're down 183 points, 188 points, not as bad as it's been the last few days. So we'll see where that goes. We also are understanding the pressure is now on Russia to answer their ceasefire opportunity. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
When Mayor Adams meets with me and wants to help us arrest criminal aliens, get us back in Rikers Island, she goes down there and tries to fire them. She's got the green light law where ICE officers and CBP officers can't get DMV data.
That is pretty outrageous. Thomas Homan up in Albany yesterday trying to straighten out New York and say we have to flood the zone with ICE agents. But it doesn't have to be that way if we could get the governor to agree to let the NYPD take part. The state troopers help out. We'll talk about that along with the Mahmoud Khalil remaining in detention and hopefully just waiting out to eventually be deported for his abhorrent behavior in Colombia.
Number two.
Russian forces currently hold the momentum on the battlefield, making it unlikely that Vladimir Putin wants a ceasefire. On the other hand, he may not want to anger President Trump by rejecting his attempts to achieve peace here in Ukraine.
We'll see what happens. That's true. It is now the world awaits formal Russian response to Ukraine's approved U.S. brokered ceasefire agreement. We'll talk to Patrick about that. I don't think Putin's on board.
Number one.
As you know, we're going to be doing reciprocal tariffs. So whatever they charge us, we're charging them. Nobody can complain about that. Whatever it is, it doesn't even matter what it is. So I don't know why people get upset about that, because there's nothing more fair than that.
Right. It's a reciprocal tariffs in a couple of weeks. The economy dominating the national dialogue as the Trump tariffs elicit an EU and Canadian backlash. We'll talk about that and the government shutdown. So when you were Congressman Patrick Murphy, you knew about these shutdowns. Did you guys experience any when you were there?
We didn't have any shutdowns when I was there, but I wasn't.
Always threatened, though.
Yeah,
right?
Always threatened. No doubt. And listen, the longest ever shutdown was in the first Trump administration, right? But, Brian, this is my frustration as an American. They are already 6 months behind. The fiscal year started October 1st, right? These key CRs.
Different administration.
Right. No, totally, right? And I'm not blaming. I'm just saying both sides need to get together, because you can't be passing CRs because it's not the right way to spend American taxpayers.
Terrible from the Pentagon.
Yes. Horrible. So Listen, you see John Fetterman, I like the fact that Senator Tim Kaine just came forward to say, hey, listen, give us amendments, right? Trying to work together. But listen, there's a lot of, you know, people want to work with DOGE and other stuff, but they got to work with Congress. Congress has the power of the purse. They can't just all leave it.
So how would you like to do it? You need the experts to look through that aren't politically affiliated with anyone. You like that idea.
Right.
Would you want Congress to approve any of the program cuts? So if they go in and see an education program or a commerce program or a Pentagon program that needs to be cut, you want them to check with Congress?
No. In a sense, yeah, because Congress is power of the purse, right? And so that's what the whole budget's about. And that's why you can't do it through a CR. And so when they're doing a CR and they are cutting other things, but they're then investing some of that money in the border, in the Pentagon, right? And that's okay. I think most folks understand that elections have consequences. What they don't understand, what pisses them off, Brian, is the fact that you have someone like Congressman Jared Moskowitz, who's part of the DOGE, basically caucus, Democrat, who's reasonable, practical, and says, they won't even meet with me. They won't even talk to us. And so they're out. Like, you know, you can't have someone who's unelected, like Elon Musk, who's saying...
Well, nobody's elected except the president.
No, the president. But they're saying, we're not going to spend the money they appropriate for us. There's a Supreme Court case, the Empowerment Act. Like, they have to work together. And that's the frustrating thing from my point. I want to cut wasteful spending. I want to cut some of the programs myself as the American, right? And I think there's a lot of Democrats that want to work with President Trump.
Maybe, but how many would cut something that they feel as though is in their interest in their constituency, but not in the interest of the country, that is $2 trillion under debt? This might be the only way to do it. Have somebody dispassionate looking at systems and programs that aren't working. And then you have an administration. Now the secretaries are in place. You work with the cabinet secretaries to push it forward.
Yeah, and I get that. But what you're not seeing, though, is the fact that they've already fired, you know, hundreds of thousands, and we're talking over 10,000 veterans, right? And so for me, you know, in the Army, we used to say, ready, aim, fire. It's fire, then ready, aim. And they're firing people, they're bringing them back. It's like, guys, I understand let's break things, let's work with a sense of urgency, but they're not even trying to work with Congress, Brian. And that's what the problem is here.
I think originally there was nobody in place, so they were doing it. What I think is going to save ultimate money is looking at Social Security and not saying cut benefits, but what kind of system are you using? Why are you not using AI to identify fraud? Why are you not using COBOL from the 1960s? You know, why are you not being able to use maybe going to a Mac system or an Apple system? So that system change, which would lead to laying off maybe people in Social Security, but not hurting people that pay into Social Security.
Right. And I think that's what you're seeing. Doug Collins, VA secretary, he's doing that with the Oracle. It's called Electronic Health Records. They only used a system 50 years ago. It's called Vista. Trump, the first term, said, hey, we're going to do the same system as DOD. It's called Oracle, Cerner. They're doing it. It was slow walking, and I think they're going to double down on it. But, Brian, that's what the American people want. And I think that's what a lot of Democrats want. That's why you see John Fetterman and Tim Kaine coming forward and say, guys, we want to work with you, but you got to work with us, man. Well, we're a co-equal branch of government.
That's a good point, but I will say this. For example, when it comes to the EPA, you know how different Democrats and Republicans feel for the most part about global warming.
No doubt.
So if you go back and you say, hey, guys, you got a bunch of programs here. You got an EV mandate. We're not for that. We're for all these different things Republicans and Democrats campaign against. So Jared Moskowitz would go, no, I want to leave that. And then the Republican would go, no, we won the election. We're going to get rid of that. So what happens? He gets labeled as not willing to work with Democrats. You look at the EPA. I think they're cutting $20 billion worth of EV programs. Clean energy programs.
Right. And
so what happens there?
I think a lot of Democrats understand there's a new sheriff in town and that elections do have consequences. What they don't like and what pisses them off is saying you can't run it down, shove it down our throat with the CR and expect that you're going to get 60 votes in the Senate. So as you said earlier in your opening, you know, you got to work together.
Tell me what you think about this. Here's Lee Zeldin, cut 38.
The death of the Green New Scam is upon us. And there are people who are congressional Democrats who are not going to be happy with our actions. I am here to fight for, as part of that Trump mandate earned November 5th, the people across this country who have seen a Green New Deal that, if fully implemented, would cost tens of trillions of dollars, and people who cannot afford to be able to heat their home, to purchase a car, small businesses that are struggling to operate. People have been put out of work, and it's going to end. And this whole grift of being able to get tens of billions of dollars of tax dollars to your friends, it's over.
Your thoughts? That would upset almost every Democrat would not subscribe to what Lee Zeldin said. Well, don't you agree?
I would agree, but they also understand there's consequences. But Lee and I serve in the 82nd Airborne Division together. I love Lee, right? But I will tell you this. I don't think they're going to get rid of the $7,500 tax break for electronic vehicles.
Why?
Because that's how you're selling electronic vehicles. Because if you have Teslas being manufactured in America, you'd rather these cars be manufactured in America and not made in China. Because they are kicking our ass on manufacturing electronic vehicles. And again, I'm not saying free electrical vehicles.
Yeah.
But Brian, I think there's some common sense things that are there. I mean, they want to talk about
the
grift.
So who cares if you don't want to buy an electric car, don't buy it. And if you want to buy an electric car, you buy it.
I hear you.
Why should you get $10,000 to buy an electric car? It's not fair to the gas
price. Well, it's for most part. But yes, and again, it's a tax cut. So you're not getting the money, but yeah, it's a tax cut. But part of that, Brian, is because we got to reward good behavior because we need to get these vehicles they're being changed. And I'm not saying get rid of the other regular non-electric vehicles or anything else. But what I'm saying is that we need to invest in smart energy now. And that means all of the above. When I was in the appropriations, I was on the Energy and Water Subcommittee. I'm for nuclear. I'm for natural gas. Pennsylvania is the second leading state in natural gas. You know, we slow walked some of the refinery stuff. You know, in the last administration, I was critical with John Fetterman and Bob Casey. But what you're seeing is you can do that at the same time as investing in smart energy for the future and manufacturing these cars now because they're being made now and they're being made in China now. And we're getting our ass kicked right now by China.
By what? In what?
China's making these cars for a lot cheaper.
Let them go make them. They're not going to be able to sell them here. And I don't want, if I want to buy an electric car, you could go do it. And now they're starting to build the infrastructure. For example, Tesla did it themselves. So they have their own infrastructure. If there's adapters, there's adapters. But Joe Biden's administration built what? I think 9 to 11 charging stations at the same time encouraging people to get electric cars?
Yeah, and they should have been more aggressive about it. But also, I would say with Elon Musk and Tesla specifically, they got $7.5 billion in tax breaks for the factory in Texas. Now, they're not saying that's grift. And what I'm saying, and I'm not trying to bust his chops, right? What I am saying, though, let's be honest, you're giving him and Tesla and other companies that are actually manufacturing these cars and these things in America, and that's what we need to get back to.
How long do you have to subsidize electric cars?
Not. I would say probably over the next 10 years.
Because Obama wanted it done. He's the only one prepared to do it. He's the only one who made the car desirable. So there was an incentive to do it. He looks at his shareholders and said, we're going to do this thing? Yeah, we're going to do it. There's an incentive to do it. So they did it. And he sitting there, as everyone says, the most valued advisor perhaps to Donald Trump than anyone else, it's going to cost him. It's going to cost him and his company, Tesla, but he's not demanding that that mandate stay in place. But I want to talk about the government shutdown if we can. What would you do if you're Chuck Schumer?
I would say, hey, let's get around with if you're going to give us amendments, give us some smart amendments that we could actually, fight for things that let us be part of the solution here.
But I don't need to give any amendments.
No, and I think that's what Tim, I mean, I think that's when you have people like Tim Kaine, who, again, his son is Marine, was our vice presidential candidate in the Democratic Party, eight years ago, I want to say.
Right.
I think he's a pretty moderate person that understands that we got to work with the Republicans, and he's willing to work with them. But you got to give him some amendments. You got to give him something.
Why? You already have a continuing resolution from a budget under President Biden. So what they did
On Friday, Brian, and they're already 6 months behind. And I was against doing a CR back in September 30th like they've been doing. They've been doing CRs for years, and that's the problem, Brian. Like, I get it, but budgets are moral documents. Budgets are what the taxpayers give.
But it's just impossible in 7 weeks for President Trump to get a budget out there. It's impossible. So he said, continue resolution. We're going to add some money to defense. House found a way to pass it. Can't believe it. Here is Chuck Schumer in the past talking about shutdowns.
The American people don't want a shutdown.
The last thing Americans need right now is a pointless government shutdown.
A shutdown would be a terrible outcome for the country.
We shouldn't shut down the government over a dispute.
So, I mean, that's his view when he was in the majority. So Fetterman says he's going to vote for it. If Rand Paul stays in, that's 54. So the result will be by 12 o'clock tomorrow night, the government shuts down. Would you say the Democrats are to blame?
No, I would say because, again, it's not a clean CR, by the way, neither, Brian. The CR, continuing resolutions, it's not a clean one. They're not saying, all right, let's just continue.
They added money to defense.
Yeah, right. So because they're cutting and they're adding. So it's not a clean CR. And that's what, like, they're not even willing to work. And again, I'm not trying to say kumbaya and everyone's going to get along. There's going to be the majority of Democrats going to be against it. You don't need a majority of Democrats. You need a hand. You need 10 to a dozen in a Senate to show. Now, you don't need that many, but as you know, but like you need like seven.
Right.
But you need to at least give the effort to have them at the table. And they're not even doing that, Brian. And like that's what is frustrating. And again, you look at the first Trump administration. He's had the longest shutdown. Like, so do I think it's going to be a shutdown? Yes. Do I think it's all Chuck Schumer's fault? Absolutely not.
Patrick Murphy, thanks so much. I know you got to run. Former Democratic congressman, served was West Point, right?
Yeah, I taught at West Point and served in combat twice. And
undersecretary of the Army. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He is the worst possible business executive that I have ever witnessed. I think Americans have had it. I hope they've had it. And now we just need to do what we can do to make the case. And I own this. We wouldn't be in this mess if we'd have won the election. And we didn't. We have to make sure that Americans know it's not just that Donald Trump is bad, but we're offering them something better. And I think that's what we need to work on.
Well, that would be good. That last half of the statement made sense. But Governor Tim Walz, I thank our lucky stars that you are not vice president, and Kamala Harris, who has, I think he's having trouble staying sober, is not president of the United States, the least equipped person ever to reach a higher office in the history of the country. Nobody wishes Kamala Harris was president. I'm telling you, even Democrats know that she would have been absolutely awful. Think about how invisible she was with an opportunity she had with a president clearly failing. She had an opportunity to step up and take over. For example, if there was a situation where J.D. Vance was the vice president and Joe Biden was the president, and he liked Joe Biden, he could go and actually save his presidency. She was unable, incapable, I'm not sure, unwilling to do any of that. But that's going to be so interesting because there's a retreat for Democrats right now, at which time there is nobody really in charge but three guest speakers, Shapiro, Whitmer, and Beshear, moderate Democrats who are in red states where Donald Trump won. So that would be better for the country for somebody who's legitimately, not like Whitmer, legitimately moderate. But Governor Tim Walz doesn't realize that. Let's go out to Monica in Oregon. Monica.
Hey, good morning.
What's on your mind, Monica?
Hey, yeah, I'm just like to respond and vent. I have witnessed, you know, these Democratic people, they're bashing Trump, they're bashing Elon Musk, and what Trump and Elon Musk and the vice president are doing is good. It makes sense.
Of course. I mean, yeah, and look at the tally. Don't look at the spin. Monica, I'm going to look at this on One Nation on the weekend. It's going to be, I think you're 3 hours off from us, so it'll be 7 o'clock your time. Just about the way they're going after Musk is the way they go after almost anybody who's close to President Trump. And they try to make anyone who, whether it's a fun relationship that Tom Brady or Tiger Woods has, or whether it's Elon Musk who takes his economic prowess and his business success and says, I'll work for free next to you. They can't beat Trump because they tried impeaching him, bankrupting him. It doesn't work. He wins. So they're going to try to do the second best thing in their minds. And that's hurt the people that are helping him. So that's why I think we should keep your eye on outside Washington. I think people appreciate the effort to get our fiscal house in order. Some of the emails coming in, thanks for the call. Raymond writes me about Ukraine. No, Russia does not want peace. Russia wants Ukraine. Russia can have peace in a moment by just stopping its attack on Ukraine. Absolutely. I hear you, Ray. We're about to find out whether we don't have to speculate anymore. We're about to find out. How about this? Lynn on the Democrat-Republican thing. He goes, Dems have propaganda speeches. He goes, Brian, what if there was a clip of several Trump first-term verbal attacks played and then asked the question how they changed since 2016? No, the answer would be not at all. Sandra in New Jersey. Sandra.
Good morning, Brian. Always nice to speak to you. You know, you asked our thoughts about Columbia. Would we go there? I'll tell you one thing. My sister was a graduate student there, and she's embarrassed to tell people that she went there, number one. And number two, I have another friend who switched their medical team out of Columbia doctors to a new network so they wouldn't be able to profit from their insurance. She feels, look, $400 million is not enough. Yeah.
I know, but it's not just Columbia. It's true. Instead of Columbia being something that looks great on your resume, now you almost want to hide it. Think about that.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Including Ireland? Is Ireland taking advantage of the U.S.?
Of course they are. I can't, you know, I have great respect for Ireland and what they did. And they should have done just what they did. But the United States shouldn't have let it happen. We had stupid leaders. We had leaders that didn't have a clue. Or let's say they weren't business people, but they didn't have a clue what was happening.
So that is the President of the United States meeting with the Prime Minister of Ireland there. The President didn't really dive heavily into what Ireland has done, and that has gone way to the left. They've ridiculed Israel, called them, they said it's genocide what's happening in Gaza. And basically, the Israelis have pulled their ambassador. They're way to the left on everything. But the president was not focused on that. He was focused on other things. Jimmy Fallon knows a lot about Ireland, doesn't brag about it, but he knows. He does Fox Across America. His show's going to start in 25 minutes. But the big story for Jimmy and the rest of the world is you'll be at Florida Theater on the 29th, which is coming up quickly. I just looked at the calendar before the segment. And then we have other dates, but that's going to be the big one.
Yeah, oh, that's Jacksonville. If you're listening on WOKV, I'm coming down to the Florida Theater. And for what I was excited, but I've been told they'll book anybody there.
That hurts my feelings because I was one of the people that was there.
You crushed it. You were a smash hit.
Well, I don't know.
No, did you go?
Did you work the door afterwards?
No. They loved you because it's been relayed to me. Like, oh, you're coming down. We just saw Kilmeade. And that's great. That's the greatest thing you could ever hear.
Just I saw him. They don't even follow up.
Like, he was in a Piggly Wiggly.
Right.
Kicking a soccer ball down the aisle.
Hey, is that your picture? Yeah, nice frame. So Jimmy Fallon is here. So, Jimmy, your thoughts about St. Patrick's Day?
Well, St. Patrick's Day as a whole, I think this is really funny because obviously I'm a New Yorker and I spent a lot of time driving a cab here. It is the one Monday of the year I would take off if I was working would be this
because
Monday. It's a mess. It starts out good because everybody gets in there excited. They go into the parade. But by 2 o'clock, you've got like couples breaking up, teenage kids puking on the sidewalk.
Right.
It gets a little ugly.
And they don't tip when you're throwing up.
No, they don't tip well. That's
right.
The thing. not the best. And that being said, I got a lot of Irish in my family. So I'll be celebrating. I'll be furthering stereotypes.
Right, which
one
will
Guinness
be
at a time.
You know, but the thing is, I was talking to, all right, I remember my son. And he says, I'm in Ireland. He said, and I said, should we go there as a family vacation? And he said, literally, all they do is drink.
Yeah, yeah.
And
hard.
And like, I'm not from my family. This family doesn't drink as much as the family I grew up in.
Yeah.
Right? So like, my daughters aren't big into drinking. My sons, they're moderate. So, and my wife is not a big drinker. So I'm clearly mismatched.
No, that's funny. But that is my son, too. He's a junior in high school.
Not big drinkers.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Because by the time I was a junior in high school, I was trying to quit drinking.
Like,
I was doing dry Januaries in middle school.
But it was a big difference in philosophies. Are the commercials different now? How have we done that?
Well, I'll tell you what. Most of their life is digital. We got out and interacted with people, and some of them were older, and we modeled their behavior or wanted to be like them. So you grew up faster. These kids grow up slower. They see crazier stuff on their phones, but they're less likely to act on it.
Like, right.
We grew up in an age, if you wanted to see a guy ride a dirt bike off a water tower, you had to climb a water tower and drag your dirt bike up.
Right. That is so funny. I would add a couple of things.
Yeah.
I was just saying to Carly Shimkus, a mutual friend of ours, she probably likes me better if she was forced to make a choice.
I believe for her sake, I hope she does.
Right.
She spends a lot more time with you.
That's true. So I said to her, it's not so much you love drinking, but to go to bars and grab that beer and be with people, even before you take the sip, that's something about that is always going to be great.
That's the best. It's like, you know what's funny? It's coffee does that. Sometimes you make a coffee and the epiphany comes before you even drink it because you're getting into that regiment.
Yeah.
And that's where the bar wins. That's where the Irish, that's where
And
we
that's
win.
Where this generation loses.
Yeah, no,
because they don't go hang out at the bar. I mean, there's a game on, things happen. Like, I have just realized it's been 4 days since I even had a beer.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
Have you ever had that happen?
I drink a fair amount of whiskey.
Really?
Yes, but not.
Oh, that's scary to
you,
me.
This might surprise you, though. I don't drink when I do comedy because I feel like I feel like it slows down my brain.
Well, yeah. Imagine if this is my thing is when I was doing it for a brief period of time, I was worried that if I ever killed having a few beers, then I'm not gonna go up there without doing that.
Then you're right? John Belushi.
Yeah, then you're like, okay, that's the only way to get up. Right, which is pretty amazing to be that drunk all the time. They were big smokers back then.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was another big thing. And that, again, was something you grew up around, so you were more likely to model it. No one, when you go out now in public, no one in your public life is smoking. I always think about that with my son because he's 16. Okay, he grew up in the era where you can't bring a bottle of water on a plane. Okay, I grew up in an era where you could bring fire onto a plane. You could smoke on the plane. Yeah. You can't have that water, but you can have a lighter in row 2.
That is so funny because I remember the first time I ever went to Europe. It was an Air France flight, and there was a smoking section and a non-smoking section. You know what the difference was? One row.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wait a second, not even a partition? So what was going on here? I mean, how could that be okay?
And a flight to Europe, like even the children are smoking on
that
flight. Everybody we knew.
You might as well. There's infants there.
6-year-old kids are smoking cigarettes on that flight.
We were still waiting for Edison to invent the baby seat, so we had no idea. So we know what's going on with the government shutdown. And we just, are we going to play into that, Jim? Are you going to be talking about it? Because Chuck Schumer says we're not going to do this.
Yeah. I mean, well, you got to be concerned because if it shuts down, who's going to transgender the mice?
Exactly.
These are the concerns you got to have. Listen, they do this all the time. Don't you feel like we were just covering this? I would love it. I would love it if we could get beyond the continuing resolution approach to governance, but we're not gonna. Because this is the one thing about it. You can tell me that their intent is pure and we got to do it in the fall. But what we don't know is world events. Sometimes world events might dictate that we have to spend money come the fall. So I'd just like to see it happen. And I always feel like we're getting a little led on. Even if their intentions are pure, I know at their core, probably 65% of Washington wants nothing to do with cutting spending. They probably want Elon to make the cuts because they don't have to take the hit.
How about this, Jimmy? They've worked 10 straight weeks.
Yeah.
And they work some weekends. The Senate is dying for a break.
Yeah.
So if they don't, if they shut the government down, are they really getting a break? They're going to get blitzed if they go home. Yep. If they stick around, it's going to be tense.
Oh, I think I actually think it's going to work. I think there's some posturing from Schumer right now, but I think they are going to keep it open by the end of this.
All right, we'll see what happens.
There you go.
And I know that President Trump's like, well, how is this my problem?
Yeah.
I mean, I got to do a budget in 7 weeks?
Yeah.
Since when? And he's mad at the previous administration and the I think Speaker McCarthy to a degree because why'd you punt this?
Yeah.
Why am I punting this? I would, you know, let me put my budget out in the spring.
Yep.
Everyone tells me how bad it is. And then by the fall, we get something done.
It's really funny, but Trump knew he was inheriting a mess. But every day that he's in office, the mess he inherited gets a little bit bigger. You know, whether you're talking about the border or the budget or anything. But, yeah, they did not deal him a hand. But
Do you remember the Ford, not Doug Ford, the current premier? Remember the
Rob Ford?
Yeah, Rob Ford.
Yeah.
Didn't he like crack?
He smoked crack, yeah.
Right. So Doug Ford's in town. He's not bringing that up. This is what he said. He blames Trump for the impasse we're having with tariffs. Cut 7.
Mm-hmm. This is absolute chaos created by one person, and that's Donald Trump. Not the American people. I always say Canadians love Americans. I love Americans. And this has to stop. Let's sit around the table and negotiate a new deal, even though he created the deal in the first place.
So your thought, is that going to get you anywhere with Trump?
No. You know how this works.
Me?
Yeah. Now he's going to get, you know, he's going to die in a hail of Truth Social posts. You know, the Trump digital firing squad is going to come his way, but rightfully so. They listen. Have they gotten over on us over the years? Yes, there are imbalances that the president's right to correct. But the problem with a guy like that, who does also have like a little bit of a checkered past in his family, is he's one more of those comments away from Trump calling his brother Marion Barry. Okay.
Absolutely.
More comment.
Right, and Doug Ford's down here, and he says, I'm going to cut off electricity. That lasts about 5 minutes. He goes, listen, I want to talk. But here's the full circle Seinfeld element to this. Mm-hmm. Why is it that New York gets their electricity from Canada?
Yeah.
Because this idiot, Governor Cuomo, who wants to be Mayor Cuomo, shut down Indian Point on a lark.
Listen.
And now we got to go get electricity from another country.
Yeah, which makes no sense at all. But yeah, Cuomo got back into politics because he thought the MAGA hats meant Make America Grope Again. He's like, oh, these aren't for me?
Right.
Yeah, I thought they were for me.
He has not learned a thing. Do we want him back?
No, nobody does.
So what's going to happen? Jim, what can you do to stop it?
Well, I think what they need, like more than anything.
Curtis Sliwa?
Yeah. I love Sliwa, and he's always a great hang when he comes on. And I think if New York pays attention...
Can I just say that's not a great... That's not really the best endorsement.
No,
he's
me,
a great hang when he comes
on.
Yeah,
he's a great hang. Because that's what you need. You need a real guy who can talk to the reality facing this city. That's what they need.
Wait a second.
They need somebody
Allison,
raw.
You said what? That's a compliment?
If you say someone's a great hang, I think that's like one of the best compliments
you can
get.
Yeah, but I want someone to run the city. I don't want to hang out
with them. But when you're a great hang, okay, you make your ideas more accessible. Because you realize this is a person taking a common sense approach who knows the city of New York. And that actually is good. It's kind of like my superpower as a cab driver. It's like I'm pretty easy to deal with. I don't know what I'm doing, but right. I'm a good hang. People get in the cab. They're like, oh, that guy, he got me lost on the way to LaGuardia. He took me to JFK, but we left.
But here's the thing. That's where we differ. I actually rather not like you, but rather you really good at driving.
Yeah, well, there's that. It depends how much time you have to get to the airport. These people were taking a foreign flight. They were getting there 3 hours earlier, wasn't it?
Absolutely. All right, so Ireland, we mentioned before, if I was a better host, I would have done this consecutively, but I'll go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
So the president was brought up, brought up a great question about Rosie O'Donnell, and the president weighed in.
Do you know you have Rosie O'Donnell? Do you know who she is? Do you know who she is?
Yeah.
You're better off not, you're better off not knowing.
Can you see Obama doing that?
Yeah, no. But that's why we love Trump. He is our Rodney Dangerfield. He got into the country club, and he makes fun of everybody.
Right.
You know, and that's funny. The Rosie thing, I laughed. I was on with Will yesterday talking about this. It's the last thing the people of Ireland needed was another potato shortage. You got to feel for them.
I mean, she did leave the country to go to Ireland.
Yeah, she put her money where her mouth is.
Right, so she's going with her 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Evidently, she's got an older son who obviously adopted and who's in the military, big conservative.
Yeah, that doesn't shock me because most of the liberal platform has alienated most people right now. There's nobody gravitating to them for ideas. Like there might be some dyed-in-the-wool liberals who voted liberal their whole life and their parents were and they are. But in terms of ideology, everybody's like, what is this?
Right.
But to her credit, she did go. I mean, in the history of celebrities leaving the country, what do we – some people count Eva Longoria, but she had left before the election.
Okay.
We might be 2 for 500 in the history of this declaration of I'm leaving.
But I think that in L.A., they've been so affected, the movie industry, by political correctness.
Yeah.
And the fact is you have to have this diverse cast and you have to pay all these taxes and it's got all these things. So everyone left.
Yeah.
So you ruined it and then left so you don't have to deal with it. I'm asking these people where they're shooting. Oh, we're in Morocco.
Yeah.
Oh, we're in South Africa. Really? Why are you there? Well, we have no rules. Tax incentives. Romania?
Yeah.
Because it looks like L.A.
Yeah.
Why not stay in L.A.?
Yeah, they don't bother now. And when you think of how far they really did go to, like, over-police content. So the Snow White movie that's out, they have no dwarves in the movie. They're using CGI dwarves.
No way.
Because they had decided it was somehow offensive to cast them in that way. Okay, but think about what that ultimately – because you're saying you're doing that in the name of protecting dwarves, but I don't know if you know this. There's not a lot of dwarf acting work out there. You know what I mean?
I did not know.
Yeah, wow, how many movies have 7 dwarf roles in them right now?
Right.
Not a lot. This was like their Super Bowl, and they got whacked by politically correct CGI. How about that?
So it is a little crazy, but now they're going to roll it out anyway. But they're limiting the red carpet because the controversy. Isn't the lead actress a big critic of America?
Yeah, Rachel Zegler hates America. She's not getting saved by a prince in this movie because she doesn't want to further the patriarchy. For real. That's one of their declarations. It's like, this is a whole new Snow White. It's supposedly unrecognizable. It's woke. It's Snow White and the 7 genders. It's a totally different world.
That's so interesting. Jimmy, the other thing is, can you imagine living in a world where you audition with thousands of other people where – I think something like 75% of all actors are out of work, not considered naked enough to make a living. And then you get the job as a lead role. You go, yeah, I'll only take it if you change everything about the script.
Yeah.
I mean, what is going on with that?
They broke the compass. They're fighting the wrong battles. And that's why they're losing, man. Hopefully they course correct.
All right. So I love talking about celebrities because I find their lives much more interesting than mine. When we come back, we talk about Jimmy's life. But the big story is Jimmy is going to be at the Florida Theater on the 29th. WOKV listeners, WDBO listeners.
Yep.
Orlando's not too far away. Also, you're going to be there at the Florida Theater in Jacksonville. On the 12th, you're going to be at the Barbara Mann Performing Arts Center in Fort Myers. Some say that's Florida, too. That's on the 12th. The 19th, you're going to be with Kennedy, which means you got to pay for her lodging at the Mohegan in Pennsylvania in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. I got to learn more about that.
Yep.
On the 31st, the week after Memorial Day, the Agoria Theater in Cleveland, Ohio, near Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to be at the Bartley Ranch at the Hawkins amphitheater in Reno. Now, this is a ranch?
Yeah, yeah.
The just Hulk like split rail?
Stop it. It's an amphitheater in Reno.
Oh.
So it's, you know, your bong water. Right. Okay, I love
would you
Reno.
Let, this is, you told me about this. Yes. That's a great venue.
Oh, it's amazing. Like, right. This is probably, for me, one of the top two highlights of the year, because a Reno crowd is a special group of people. You can't offend them. I've tried everything.
Right.
It can't be done.
Right.
These are good people.
And no one's ever born there. They just choose to be there.
Northern Nevada, the best people. I promise.
Back in a moment.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
I like those because they're expensive.
No, they're tough. I've always said they're good.
Sam goes, I need to find some Air Diors. We turn left. And there's a what size are you?
Like 8.
8.5. That's incredible. Ben's like, no, 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 no.
That's a lot of lawns you got to mow there.
a lot of lawns.
So that was Ben Affleck, and his son pointed out sneakers that he wanted that were $6,000, you said, right, Allison?
Yep.
So there's $6,000, and Ben Affleck was being a parent. And he's getting some blowback on that by saying, just buy him. You got money.
Yep.
Buy him for the kids. And Jimmy Fallon, do you feel you're also a big celebrity?
Yeah, huge.
But you don't produce your own movie, so not as big. So your answer to Ben Affleck, is he being a good parent?
Yeah, he's definitely doing the right thing. And the reason being is, if you just buy him stuff, they have no appreciation for anything. There is a lot of value on a serious level in doing things, self-reliance. And that is a skill kids need to be taught. Like Lincoln, if he wants his fentanyl, he goes to Port Authority.
Exactly.
I'm not driving over there in my taxi. Right. You go look that cross-eyed man in the eye.
Right.
You buy your fentanyl.
And the thing is with you, a lot of people, a lot of parents, this is where you're different. A lot of parents are against illegal drugs.
No. Listen, we've seen this kid's grades. We need to try an alternative
do
approach.
Anything. He wants to stand up too, or is he doing it?
I don't know what he's doing. The truth is, you know, Lincoln does gravitate towards what we do. Like, I have him on the radio once in a while. I have him on TV. He's good. A lot of poise. I don't know that he could admit he wanted to be a performer, because there's a stigma around that if you grow up playing sports. You know what I'm saying? So for me, I had the same experience. Kid I grew up with, Steve Robbins, was in a school play at New York Tech. And I went and saw him in a play when we were like sophomores in college. And his mom was there. This is how I got into showbiz. This is crazy. His mom was there on Friday night. She was divorced. And my mom had just recently gotten divorced after 30 years, which is amazing. If you're married 30 years, you get divorced. You're saying, like, I'd rather die alone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But stick with me. But as I was sitting there watching this kid in a play, I was like, you know, it'd be cool if my mom had something to do on a Friday night. And I started doing stand-up. That's how I got into stand-up, to get my mom out of the house.
Get
and then my mom's
here.
Got a man and whatever. I got a career. But that is how it started.
Right.
I started going to opium dens on the Lower East Side of Manhattan and bombing at open mics.
See, I would be afraid. Like, one thing when I was doing it, I do not like doing it in front of my family.
Yeah.
I like to not know they're there. But you're saying you actually went with them.
Yeah, in the beginning. I dragged them out to, like, they're called bringer shows. That's how it works. So a comedy club, like when Caroline's
was
open.
Mom.
Yeah, absolutely, as audience. She becomes, she's padding the stats, you know what I mean? You need those signatures to get on the ballot. So bringer shows, you're a comic.
Of course.
Have to bring 10 audience members for them to put you on stage, because nobody wants to see you otherwise. So if every kid brings 10 people, you have a crowd of 100 people, there's a show.
I know. It is so counterproductive. You're trying to impress an audience, but you rig the game. Jimmy, can't wait to see you at the Florida Theater.
Boom.
On the 29th. Where do you go to get those tickets?
March 29th. Go to foxacrossamerica.com.
Perfect.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States.
It's a very disturbing case.
In never-before-heard interviews and first-hand perspectives.
It's described as pure evil. That's a good description.
The Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door. Listen and follow now with Amazon Music. Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.